Hey everybody, Ben Rosen from Hype East Radio here. We wanted to take a moment before our 50th episode to thank all of our loyal listeners for tuning in week after week. We also wanted to take this opportunity to announce that Hype East Radio will be going on a brief hiatus while we rebrand and retool the show for season 2. Whatever happens, we'll be back soon with bigger guests, better conversations, and hopefully more insider insight for you to learn from. Anyway, with that out of the way, we're proud to present our season 1 finale. An in-depth interview with Alex Molinsky, the man behind the cult Instagram brand NASA Seasons. Enjoy. Driving the culture forward, this is Hype Beast Radio. My name is Ben Rosen. Today on the show, why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hey, I'm Molinsky, 21 years old, French designer, 9 New York.
I'm Will Jarvis. I work with Millie from Connecticut, 22 years old, and we're happy to be here.
Awesome. And you guys work together on NASA Seasons, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So for a little bit of background, what should people know about NASA Seasons as a brand?
All right. So basically, the brand started 3 years ago now when I was a senior in high school in Paris. Mm-hmm. The idea was just, it came out from my interest of, you know, about streetwear. Also, my desire to not just go to college, but do kind of like a project on the side, like I guess many kids nowadays. And yeah, it just felt right to do some caps. I don't really wear caps myself, but I thought it was a good way to start off in the streetwear world. And pretty quickly, it kicked off when I was distributed at Colette, which now closed a few months ago. And from there, it kind of grew organically. And yeah, we're doing collaborations now. We're doing cool stuff. We're sold around the world, so
yeah, the brand kind of grew to represent a little bit the youth culture, and also has that sort of self-aware twist. So we got the phrases on the hats, and that's what we're known for. Almost Famous, No Pictures, I Came to Break Hearts, and yeah, we're growing from there. We took a step back, looked at the history of the brand, and lined up some collaborations and have some new collections coming out that we're excited about.
So it's interesting that you started it in high school while you were in France. You go to school in the States now, right?
Yeah, I go to college in Connecticut. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So and that's not exactly like a fashion hub. So do you like take field trips into the city like this?
Exactly. So I kind of put all my classes, I mean, Connecticut is not that far, but I've put my classes all at the beginning of the week so I can go to New York like during the weekend, first day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And can meet with people, do some meetings, wow. Party.
So you're kind of like part-time in the fashion world, but what are you studying in college right now?
I mean,
are you both in college?
Yeah, at the, yeah.
Okay.
Both in college.
What? Right, and you guys probably met like what, like freshman year or something?
We met through our friend early on. I go to a different college than him in Colorado, actually. But okay. I'm from Connecticut. And then our good friend, Amory,
who's the photographer for the brand, introduced us. Yeah.
Okay. And then so you guys met up.
We'll travel around and we'll be in LA or New York, but we try and make time during school.
Wow. Okay. And so you're studying in Connecticut, you're studying in Colorado. Yeah. A lot of the brand seems to be inspired by LA. It seems like you guys kind of like have. Yeah, you guys have jet set a lot.
We are. The West is the best.
Yeah, exactly. And so. Yeah. What has been, and I think one of the things that has been really kind of cool about the brand is it kind of happened, it felt like you said, it almost happened overnight. Like it started with dad hats, and then next thing you know, Rihanna and Beyonce are wearing them. So what was the in-between? I know you mentioned Colette, but what were the in-between phases between being a high schooler that was like, I'm just going to make a dad hat, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden being kind of like catapulted? What was that in-between phase?
So I think at the very beginning, I was on Instagram for... Like a lot of kids, I was on Instagram constantly, you know, taking quote-unquote, you know, cool pictures, but nothing really concrete and nothing really business-oriented. And at some point, I realized I wanted to put out a product that would be successful, but also, you know, be very simple. And just, you know, like brands like Antisocial, Social Club have a very distinct theme that people can really relate to. And I thought the dad caps were good because it was very, I mean, it was not that fashionable when I started, but it was starting to be fashionable.
And like, I think it's like the dad cap is the perfect place for the phrase, right? So if you have like no pictures on it, That's awesome, because it's on your head and like in your face.
Yeah.
And it's sort of that whole like fame obsessed culture thing, which
also it's very easy to put on people, because, you know, you can go to a party, put a cap on someone, like a celebrity, for example, and they can just put it for 1 minute. You take a picture, it's done. You know, it was like a t-shirt. It's more complicated, of course.
Right,
it's a different process. So the caps were kind of easy also in terms of production, because that's a very important part that like people don't really talk, because it's kind of boring, but it's still really important when you want to deliver stores. In terms of production, caps are really easy because it's one size. And it's just embroideries. It's pretty easy. So it was a really easy way to start off as a brand. I didn't need much fund to do it when I started in the senior year of high school. So then when you're French, Colette is like the Mecca of fashion. That's really where everything happens. It's the only very good store in Paris or in Europe even sometimes, I would say. So I went to Colette, I proposed my caps probably like 20 times to Sarah, who was the director. And she said, no. And one, I guess she thought it was interesting to try to work with a brand that came off Instagram.
Right.
It's like kind of like a label producer being like, oh, we're going to work with a SoundCloud rapper.
Right.
That's kind of the same type of thing, because Instagram was becoming really prominent in 2014. And she realized the system of followers was a good analytics to predict the potential commercial success of a brand. So she was like, okay, let's try. You have that many followers, potentially can turn into sales. And so I delivered her 100 hats in July 2015, sold out in a day.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so then, like, instantly she kind of knew that there was like a
instantly,
real...
Yeah, I was really, really surprised. And she was even more surprised, I guess. And from there, I was restocking them each week for the summer of 2015. And then a guy called Luca Modesti, who owns the brand Resort Corps,
mm-hmm.
maybe you heard of it, he's European, he came up to me in the DMs in October, and she's like, oh, we need to scale now seasons commercially in the world. And he had a huge database of stores, buyers from stores. Like, okay, let's try, let's just send emails, let's just send the picture of Rihanna you have, just say you're sold out, Colette, let's see how it goes. We received around 70 responses from buyers. We did a showroom in Paris in January 2016. And now we're sold up approximately 60 stores.
So you did a showroom of hats, basically.
Exactly. And people were kind of surprised, because we were next to Off-White. We were in between Off-White and Marcello Berlon. I mean, the New Guard brands. And there was this weird cap showroom with nothing. It was a huge showroom because we bought it like last minute. It was just white walls with like six caps like on the floor.
Wow.
It was very very Yeezus, very minimalistic.
Very DIY.
Exactly. So, and then it worked really well, because I think the product is so simple, and nowadays, you know, people like simple stuff. If you look at the Saint Pablo merch, it's super, super minimalistic, and that's why kids want. And also the thing that's being, you know, had, it's easy to see the product. It's very, so people want to be part of this club, I guess.
A lot of people that we've talked to on this show, when they're talking about building a brand, like I think one of the things is that like you're always kind of like dressing up a gang. Like your brand has to be like a uniform for like a gang of people that you can relate to. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like your guys' thing was like, if you're going to a party and you don't want people to take pictures of you, there's the hat for you.
Yeah, right? Exactly. That's like why it got that like sort of cult reputation. And now you see like a lot of celebs are wearing it, and like we don't even know they're wearing it. We don't give them the hat.
I was going to say, you know? What was the day? Like, I've had situations where like, you know, if you get like a retweet or whatever from a celebrity or something, what was it like the morning that you like see Rihanna wearing your hat?
So it was in November. I was off 2015. So a few months after I started selling at Colette, and I woke up fully like hangovered, and I opened Instagram, and there was like a lot of people tagging me on Rihanna's picture. I was like, I'm not such a big Rihanna fan. I mean, it's not a public fact about me. So why would people tag me on Rihanna's post, you know? And so then I opened like a post really drunk, and I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
That's my I Came to Wake Heart's hat. And that was crazy. The pictures were kind of very blurry, but then eventually I found some good ones on the weekend Facebook page. The same day later, she was with Travis Scott. And that was awesome. The day after, the morning after, she also worn my hat again in a different outfit, and then she worn it the same year approximately 6 times.
I think it's crazy because, like, for you, that's like the lookbook. You're set. You don't have to, like, you don't necessarily have to do a full editorial shoot because those photos are seen by millions of people immediately. I mean, I don't know how many million Instagram followers Rihanna has, but it's like that kind of pops up and she doesn't mind posting like the candid photos. Has that been something you guys have like worked with?
Oh yeah, for sure. That's like a big part of it. I mean, we'll do editorial content and we have a team who works on that as well. And yeah, we try and like tell the brand story that way, but it's going to come out on different platforms sometimes, whether it's in a publication or whatnot. But on Instagram, for sure, yeah. I mean, they're reposting and they're telling it. And then the phrases, it's like the perfect no pictures or almost famous or came to break hearts when the celebrity's wearing that. I think it works really well.
Yeah.
And so it's being told for us, which is nice.
And I think what's cool about the brand is that I think people like the brand because it's kind of it was even more low-key when Rihanna wore the hat. It was like nobody knew the brand.
Yeah.
But still, there was like Rihanna, Wiz Khalifa, Tyga wearing them the same week in November. So the brand was like at huge exposure, but the brand was really unknown. So I thought people really liked buying a product.
So this was like, it was kind of happening at the same time as you were in Colette. And then a couple months later, yeah, that happens.
Yeah, exactly.
And then all of a sudden, like whenever you're sending a press release or whatever, you just attach the photos of Rihanna.
Not really, because I really didn't know. So I was like 18 or 17, 18 at the time. I didn't know how really the press thing worked. I didn't have like a publicist because we didn't have any money. So actually Vogue did a story
about the hats,
about that by themselves. I mean, without really contacting me.
Wow.
And that was huge on their Vogue.com website. And also the Vogue article, I guess, helped a lot with the buyers because that's a kind of a legitimate thing, especially for a young brand. So, but yeah, I think the whole strategy of a brand was to be kind of low-key, not try too hard. And just, yeah, I mean, now we send to some celebrities, some products. Yeah, friends of a brand, yeah. And so, but yeah, mostly we're kind of surprised by everybody wearing the products. And I guess, I don't like using this term, but yeah, it's kind of like an influencer type, sure, of marketing where...
Yeah, but it almost seems natural because you...
It is natural, yeah.
Yeah.
Like we've never paid anyone to post our thing. It's very like, I would DM someone on Instagram, I like your style, I like your Instagram, I would love to send you a product. If they like it, great.
So
if they don't
it.
Like
yeah.
it, yeah.
And I like that we can bring the conversation back around to Instagram because I think that's been very like crucial. Like you said, this is we've talked about this, I think, for an interview before,
yeah,
where we talked about you specifically building the mm-hmm. business on Instagram. And I think like Forbes has talked to you about it. How would you say, what kind of advice would you give to people that are looking to build brands on Instagram now? Is it over? Is that like over, or do you think people can still do it?
I think it's becoming really hard, actually. I think it's becoming harder every year because I think it's kind of becoming saturated. But still, Instagram is such a cool democratic tool to reach out to people. And with really low means, you can potentially reach out to a huge amount of people and then create sales in return. I mean, for us, that was the case. And we've spent almost zero on marketing so far. And Instagram was our only tool. But I think it's becoming really hard. I think there's way many more people. And Virgil Abloh was really, really early on Instagram. He probably started using Instagram in 2012 or 11, like during Watch the Throne kind of era. And so because he was so early, I think that really helped why he's so famous now. I think Virgil Abloh started using Instagram 3 years after. That would have been a different story, I feel.
Right.
So it's a lot about the timing.
And like one other piece of advice is I think it takes a lot of persistence. Like people think that it's so easy, like you post a pic and then
people
you're good,
order.
But no, like that's not how it works. And you still have like now you still have those benefits of Instagram to reach that large audience really quickly and at a low cost, but you have to try so hard. And part of it is just failure, like over and over again. And that's important. I think a lot of people, maybe in fashion especially, underestimate that, like the side of, you know, no matter how creative you are and how good your designs are or your product is, you're still going to have to be like hustling constantly.
Yeah. And I mean, I like the point that you made where you said that when you're working on the, you're still doing lookbooks, you're still doing editorial content. It is, there are still things that you would find.
You have to tell your story.
We are doing editorials, but I don't really think it's, I don't really think it's, it will even be useful, you know?
Yeah.
Because I, it's better to have, you know, 20 influencers posting on their Instagram some shitty selfie they took with your product than doing an editorial that's going to cost you money and that's not really going to, you know, turn into sales.
Ultimately, you want to create meaning for the hat, right? And so if the Instagram post with Rihanna wearing it means more to people and is telling like a better story, then that's good.
Right.
And you run with that and like you incorporate that into the brand DNA.
But also I think the brand, the design itself and the product itself are self-explanatory for the brands. Like,
yeah,
I came to a cards, almost famous, no pictures. You directly know what's the brand theme by looking at
it's
the product.
Right, it has the heart on its
sleeve. Like if you're a brand, it's like more like,
it's like it's
conceptual.
Yeah,
you need the visuals to kind of tell the story behind the products.
That's true. I feel like there's like certain things where it's like, yeah, if you tried
it's
to,
not accessible.
Yeah, if you tried to explain Helmut Lang to someone using just Instagram,
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's so much more at play there. On the timeline of things, you have Colette, and then you have more Stockists now. But you turned down. I remember we talked about this. You turned down getting stocked in Urban Outfitters. I think it was
exactly. Yeah. So that was right after Rihanna. And they proposed me a huge deal. I mean, for a young guy, it was really a relatively really good deal. I mean, in terms of money, I mean. And so, but I realized I can't be at Urban Outfitters and be at Colette at the same time. Especially my dream was to be at Barney's, and you really can't get Barney's and Urban Outfitters. So I was like, let's say no to Urban Outfitters and hope to get luxury retailers only. And of course, several, because that's the goal. And it happened, but it took time. It was not.
You guys are both still in college. If I was in college and I got an email from Urban Outfitters that had multiple zeros in it,
mm-hmm.
I'm jumping on that. Like, that's the easiest. How difficult is it to turn that down? And how long does it take before the other luxury retailers start returning your emails?
Well, I also think, like, to that point, it takes a lot of self-restraint. And I think it's important because Alex knew where he wanted the brand to go and he had that crystal vision. And it was like, no, we're not going to compromise on selling out to Urban. We don't think that's a like cool and relevant to the brand. And we're going to go after these people because that's really who we're going to represent. Mm. And if you stick to that, that's what's important. But the self-restraint part and at such a young age was quite remarkable.
Man, I would have woken up the next day and had ramen and just been like, what the fuck did I just do?
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
you kind of like, you have to hold your head up through
it. You have that vision, so it doesn't matter. Like, you just keep.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, we were really polite with them and we said, if we change our minds, we'll come back.
Yeah,
so
it was
not like a brutal, like, no, it was like,
yeah,
thanks a lot.
We're going to listen to some other people kind of thing. Like, we'll see
exactly.
what we're doing 6 months down the line.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So that's another tip. Don't blow off offers. Just be nice and polite.
No, yeah, for
be
sure.
Nice
that's
be nice to everybody.
We need to be happy and
yeah, that's
show
never
love.
Taught in fashion school, but that's literally a fact that gets you further than anything.
Very
here,
true.
Yeah.
And now I think is where my interview part gets kind of interesting. So you've gone from dad hats to NASA season as a brand, turning down Urban Outfitters, and the latest thing is the Rolling Stones merch.
Yeah.
So can you explain that a little bit? You handled the merch for this.
Exactly. So I'm doing the merch for the new tour that just started last Thursday. It's a European tour that they're doing. It's about 15 dates in mm-hmm. Europe. So what happened basically is that I was talking with my friend, Lucas a lot last year. Lucas Jagger, he's one of the sons of Mick Jagger, and he's really into streetwear. So he
really
early followed my brand and like my products. He bought some hats, and I was talking to him, and I'm a huge Rolling Stones fan. So I was like, I love to work with the Stones, but of course, you know, that's a hard reach. So he's like, yeah. And then I think one day he just showed my design to his dad when they were together on vacation. And I was like, oh, they're really fun. I'd love a hat. And maybe he should try to propose some designs for the new tour. So I got super excited. He told me about that. And I worked for like 4 months on it.
Yeah, that was 4 months. A decent amount of time.
I did like 300 designs different. The first one were really shitty.
Yeah, there was a learning curve.
Yeah, there was a learning process.
What's the process of making tour merch like? Because I mean, like with the Rolling Stones, it's got to be nuts because there's like, you know, 60 years or whatever of like archival stuff that you can pull from, right?
So yeah, so for merch, so I had a huge talk with their creative team to kind of understand what's like a good type of merch. And of basically, like, you know, when you're at a concert, you see from kind of far away all the t-shirts. And they told me the designs need to be really big because people at concert, you can't just do like a kind of a heart detail position thing. You need to like a whole frontal designs. And then I really wanted to kind of remix the Rolling Stone song because that's like a very
iconic.
An iconic and very, you know, honorific thing to do. So I worked with that and I really tried to make it way more minimalistic than it really is, than the classical version. Again, kind of putting my aesthetic with Nasty Seasons, a very minimalistic product, with a Rolling Stone aesthetic. So then I did back and forth. Eventually they chose 4 designs.
Out of 300?
Yeah, out of 300 in March. And then they realized they really, really, really liked the 3 they chose, mm-hmm. or the 4 they chose, 3 or 4. And then between March and until the last day before the tour, they asked me for more designs almost every day. Like, Jesus. Oh, we need take that direction, but do different ones, but kind of take
the similar look, but similar give look us like as 13 different versions.
Exactly. Yeah. So I did that.
I think every graphic designer has dealt with that.
I produced like 30, around 20 new versions, and they chose 12. So really good ratio.
In the end product.
So in the end product.
300 rough draft.
Yeah.
4 in like the second draft.
Exactly.
Or like the selects.
Yeah, that was a fun process to watch.
Wow.
Yeah, and Jesus. So and the last ones were sent the day before the start of the tour. And I don't know how they do it, but like they sent the designs to their factory, the files to the factory in Dublin, and they produce the t-shirts overnight.
Wow.
So that was really last minute. It was Mission Impossible.
And how do you know Mix Son? Is that just like a...
Yeah, I mean, it was just through... He followed me a long time ago and we just started talking about streetwear mainly. Like really, we didn't talk about the Rolling Stones or anything.
He just kind of he's a fan of clothes and stuff.
Yeah, I didn't even realize he was...
Mick Jagger's son.
Yeah, because that's not... Yeah, it was just very crazy. But yeah, no, we talk about streetwear. And I think it was cool for him to, I guess, maybe help, because he helped a lot through the process also of the designs, cutting back and forth. And because he was, of course, you know, part of a Rolling Stone somehow, and into streetwear, it was cool to be the bridge between Nada Seasons, kind of youth culture, and the band.
That's insane. And are they going to like fly you out to Europe to go see him now, or do you get to go and see the tour?
I'm trying to go to one of the dates, of course, or at least two. I'm trying to go to the Twickenham dates, which is in June.
Nice.
Yeah. In London, that's supposedly the biggest concerts of a tour, so...
Man, that's... Yeah. And did you meet the Stones at all during it, or was it all done pretty remotely?
I mean, no, it was done pretty remotely. So that went through also Bravado. I don't know if you know
Bravado. Yeah,
Bravado does the merch for Universal. And they work with a lot of artists. And so I met with Bravado several times. I'm meeting with them today, actually, later. And they actually, it was great to work with them. They're super creative, super open to ideas. And hopefully, you know, I'm super down to work with more artists on merch and stuff like that. But I really hope to meet the Stones, yes.
Yeah, and I think like just to add a cool part of this project, because that was your first like solo project at Malinsky. I was separate from NASA Seasons, sort of branching out from
I
that.
I feel like that is sort of like a big moment too, right? Because you've been doing everything in the brand and then you've also got this like alter ego kind of thing that you're doing. And this is like your first dedicated project. And it's with like arguably everybody's dad's favorite rock band. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty awesome.
No, it's great. Also, I didn't really want to use my name Malinsky for any projects now because I didn't really know what I wanted to use. To use it for, but of course, when you do merch, you can't really do merch under a names brand. It's not really possible. That's what Bravado told me. So I was like, oh, I guess
And like, it's good because I think it's good to keep NASA separate, cultivate that image, very specific. And then Millie, you can do, you know, all your projects.
Yeah, work on more. Yeah.
Which is sick.
Here's a question. How do you think of the name Malinsky?
I don't know how it came out.
It really came out
like that. I know there's a horse, like a very famous,
like a racehorse,
like a competitor horse named Malinsky.
No way.
Because before I had all those articles, if you type Malinsky, there was the horse records in last
wild
races.
NASA seasons and horses.
Nights like Pitch 5, fortunately.
Wow.
But yeah,
we beat them on Google.
And
NASA seasons really is. It's like you said, you guys have a team of people that are handling editorial, but it's mostly you guys doing it, right?
I mean, when you have a brand, and so now we sell several dozens of thousands of hats, and so of course there's a huge logistic part that usually, you know, people don't really talk about, but that's really important, of course, when you're a brand. So we have approximately 4 employees that work day to day to handle the shipments to the stores, shipments to the private customers who ordered on our websites.
But they're all on the supply side of things. I guess my question is that you seem to be very active in terms of talking to the press, and you guys are doing your own publicity.
Yes,
basically.
We're really well organized.
Yeah, definitely. That's been a push for the past year or so, is to really organize a team internally. Figure out what people are doing, and then just
And how would you recommend people go about like making themselves available to these like press publications? Because like you said, you had like we've talked for Hypebeast articles in the past. There's also Forbes, Business Insider, I think, has talked about you guys. Like you've talked directly to these journalists. How would you recommend people go about doing that? Because some designers are like anti-press. Some designers are like very like, no, I'm not, I don't really do interviews. Almost like rappers, I guess.
Yeah, but I think that's cool. I mean, I'm not saying it's...
it's the only way of doing it.
I'm not saying I'm doing it right. I think it's pretty cool, actually, to do no interviews. I really think it's cool.
That's a cool habit.
I mean, I really love people like Frank Ocean because they just don't do interviews.
Mysterious,
and they're very mysterious.
Yeah, it's part of their image.
And I think somehow the brand Nascens could also be very cool.
Yeah.
It was even less
I think we, yeah, that's, we stay more like cult label there. But then with
But actually, I do way less interviews than I used to because I kind of really want to let the product speak for itself and
keep a little mystery.
Comment on it.
But I really liked and it's good. I like the approach of doing less interviews. Makes this one feel a little bit more important. But it also, I think, in a lot of ways, when I was watching, kind of because we followed each other on social media for a while now, and it's been kind of interesting to watch how it went from, you know, Instagram only to being in stores to now on the big stage and all that. But throughout it, at least at the beginning, you seem to be willing to explain it to anybody that would like, if they wanted to talk about what it was like to run a business on Instagram, you were like, yeah, sure, let's talk about it. And it seemed like that was kind of a very good, transparent thing to do. Was that just because you were like eager to get some publicity, or were you just like ready to talk?
It's a bit of everything, I guess. But I think I was just really, really proud to do what I did that young, but especially from a business part. Because I don't think my designs, I love what I do and I love the designs and I think the theme is really strong and fun. It's great to do it. But because the designs are very simplistic, my real work and what I worked for with Nascens was a lot of the business part and the marketing. And you know, when you're young and you are in high school, college, and you say to people, oh, I do hats. It's kind of very, how do you say it? It was like a very small way to describe what I did, basically. And I think what's maybe impressive with what I did was to be the first kind of Instagram brand to be able to sell at Barney's, Colette, and all the stores. And I was looking for publications like Forbes, Bloomberg, or like they come up to me and I welcomed those interviews to explain how I did it, because that was really a thing I was really proud of. And thing that was actually, I didn't do any marketing classes, didn't do any marketing stuff before. it was very genuine, and I was I wanted to explain how that could happen.
Self-taught. Yeah, I think it's important for like young people who are doing any business stuff, fashion, whatever. You're learning. I think I can speak for us both. We learn more doing this than going to school.
Yeah.
And so that's important, and I think sharing that, you can separate it from like the brand image, still have that sort of coolness, and you don't have to speak on behalf of that, but for Alex to get out there and talk to people about the process is sick, because it's out there, and like people can do it, you just gotta take it.
Wait, what are you guys studying in school, by the way? Are you guys studying stuff that's similar to this, or?
No. I mean, I study Russian history and art history.
And poli-sci.
Oh shit, we'll keep talking after this then. That's awesome, that's fucking cool. Wow, that's, yeah, because I guess most of the time, you like the fashion kids are like born and bred in fashion.
Yeah.
I feel like most of the time. Yeah. And I like what you said about the business aspect of it, because that's usually kept so far from this stuff. Like everybody likes the interviews where it's like they talk about vibes and the mood or whatever.
But yeah, like if you look at like all the Spaghetti Boys, I mean, he doesn't have a brand, but Luca and everyone, I love them. I think they're really, really cool. And yeah, they don't talk at all about the business part, because that's not fun to talk about.
Yeah.
And
different audience.
It's a different audience. But I think that's why also it's also cool about the streetwear right now, because, you know, you have all these different types of people. But at the end of the day, we often all go to the same places and do the same type of events, things like that. So I think that's what's really cool about it.
So what's the hardest part about managing all of the business stuff and the college stuff at the same time? Is it getting on FaceTime, staying on schedule?
I think it's really deciding whether to work or to party after classes. That's the big dilemma.
No, it's tough. I mean, yeah, we're still kind of young, but it's a lot of work. And it's also a lot of communication. Like, we have to be talking constantly with each other all the time, like, know what's up. And when you're working also with a team of young people, I think it's good that we like sort of have reality checks, and like we'll get stressed out, but like we check in, because everybody has stuff going on, and it's sometimes hard to tell, especially if we're away at school, you know, what the other person's going through. And so that can affect it.
But also, but especially now we're releasing a collab with Rimowa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, I'm really happy about it. In 2 weeks.
Is it a hat or a bag?
It's a bag and a hat. It's like a huge pack of stuff.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Awesome.
And that's going to be really cool. And actually that was a pretty fun story. So we used Instagram for that, because I DM'd a few months ago, Alexandre Arnaud,
mm-hmm.
who's the now CEO of Rimowa. I was like, hey, what's up? Let's do a collab. It was like, yeah, sure.
Is that really how you're doing it? Like, you're just like, you find their Instagram profile and you're just like, yo, I'm just going to...
Instagram's a new LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly. Instagram
has
new LinkedIn.
Been for a while.
I really
LinkedIn is a scam.
And, you know, I mean, he's the CEO of a big brand, all about LVMH.
And you have
LVMH.
The blue check on Instagram, so you're legit. So you can...
Now that's how the girls...
Oh, that's how that works. Okay. But that's actually crazy, because it's like you just message the CEO instead of talking to...
No, that was insane. I messaged him. It was like, let's do a collab. He was like, yeah, sure. Just call me. So I called him the day after. We had a really cool call for 1 hour where he explained me like all the direction with Rimowa. They want to do collab. So they did a collab with Supreme. I'm sure you covered that recently. And they're doing a collab with Off-White in July. Like, oh, you could be in between. So I was like,
wow, so you got like,
why not?
Yeah.
Primo spot.
High praise. Yeah. Why not? That's, that's crazy. So that's a good piece of advice. Just DM people, man. Just shoot.
DM aggressively.
Yeah. Just
don't
shoot.
Give up.
Yeah. Don't give up.
There are going to be a lot of unread. So that's the important part.
Yeah. Of course.
People.
I mean, that happens with this show too, man. We get blown off by so many people that we ask to come on here. I'm not going to name names, but it's just like, yeah, people don't respond, but we don't forget.
Right, exactly.
And then years later, when you're collaborating with them, you should just tell the people at the table that.
Yeah, yeah, but you see them at an event.
But it's fine. People, they might have been busy or something else.
Yeah, life happened.
I don't judge or anything. But no, that one was really funny. It's going to be really fun. We're doing a huge
event.
Party.
Yeah.
Because I really
wanted, back to the roots.
We really wanted to make that collab very special and bring our youth vibes. So. Yeah. we're doing a huge dinner. We're doing a huge dinner in Paris in 9 days, then followed by a party. And I won't name people because that's going to be a surprise, but a lot of very, yeah. very influential people in the industries said they were coming to the dinner, like very high up.
We know how to have a good time, throw a good party.
So that's going to be kind of
key.
That's crazy that you're like, you're going to be in college next week or whatever, and then you're going to be like, hey guys, like I got to go. I'm going to Paris for this party that we're throwing over there.
Yeah.
Do people know in your classes what you're doing, or do you just kind of like, are you like double life, like kind of like a vigilante?
No, kind of double life, but my teachers know.
Because you probably have to explain it.
All my teachers are rich. Yeah, and I had to go to LA several times during weekends, and I had to miss classes. I'm very, you know, transparent with my teachers and,
there's so many tips here if you're trying to like do a side hustle in college, basically.
Yeah,
cause like literally like, yo, talk to your counselor, get your classes arranged. So you have the weekends to yourself.
Get those relationships early.
Also the way I see college is really, I'm not like the type of guy to say, oh, kids need to go to college. That's the thing they should do. It's like, I take the classes I take because I genuinely want to learn more about it. And if one day I have something important to do for the collab with the Stones or Rimowa or whatever, I'll don't go because I just don't have time to go I don't feel bad about it. And if I have nothing to do, I'll go to class and I'll be happy to do the assignments. And
You just got to keep your priorities in check and like manage.
I want to learn
time.
Stuff, but I'm not gonna block myself from working on other stuff. So
that's awesome. And usually when we're coming toward the end of the interview kind of thing, we always like try to ask someone like, if you could go back and offer like the 13-year-old version of you any sort of like one piece of prescient advice, like change their direction in life or like improve where you are right now, what would it be and why? Seth Rogen said invest in LaCroix. Yeah.
What did he say? Did he say invest?
He said invest in LaCroix. Like, you know, like the seltzer water? That was his one.
Epic. When I look back, even what I posted on Instagram or things I did, like the first lookbook for instance, I'm horrified by what I did. You know? But at the same time, like if I didn't do that,
we wouldn't be
here. Wouldn't have realized it was so shitty so that I can now do cooler stuff.
Yeah.
So it's hard to...
I think a lot of people's answers to this question usually are just like, yo, don't be embarrassed. Don't worry about it.
You know, what I would say is like, don't have get a lot of people to say no to you while you're young.
Get used to that.
Get used to it and welcome it too. And like, don't like search for it and
seek it out. But if it happens, don't let it ruin your life.
Yeah. And just keep doing it. And I think that's like practice though. So that's why start young.
That's pretty good. Oh yeah.
Well, so one thing I think is important is like when you, I think what I really, what I looked at when I started looking at, I was part of the Tumblr culture where I like followed a lot of people, even like Virgil with a Pyrex Tumblr page.
Wow, I remember that actually. That was crazy.
That was super cool. That Tumblr was way fun, more fun than Instagram, I feel.
That's a whole different conversation, but it's so true. Yeah, the like all of the kids that came up off of Tumblr now all have like creative director jobs.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. And so, so basically I think I really looked at, for example, people like Virgil's path and I tried to understand what events in their career led to the next big step. And I was really kind of almost very serious about that. Like an assignment, like why did this author was able to do his masterpiece at the end of his career? And with Virgil, and you're like, oh no, I mean, he's just cool. No, like there's a clear path to where he's gone. And I was trying to understand for me, for what I want to do, what's this path gonna be and what are the steps? So that's why I think I was very serious about, oh, I need Colette, then I need Celebrity, but I need Vogue, but I need blah, blah, blah. So it all lined up in a very genuine, but also very focused way. I knew where I was going, kind of. So that was important, I think, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for finding some time.
Yeah.
Thank you
for
coming through.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Coming
We've
in.
Been
Thanks.
Laying the groundwork for this for like what feels like almost a year. So this is really cool.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's been a while. Yeah, we're excited.
And shout out to Kareem, too, man.
Yeah,
that's the MVP.
Radio Vines.
Gang.